All right, Callahan and Torty back here for hour number three. This week in pro football, 97.5 The Fanatic, the National Football League, live from the Parks Casino Sportsbook here in Bensalem, PA. All right, Joey, let's get this guy on the phone here, and the sage of this week in pro football, the host of the NFL Matchup Show, the author of Philly Special and Hall of Fame elector, a busy man. Be Sal Palantonio. Good morning, Sal.
Oh, good morning, Pat. Joe, how you guys doing?
All right. We are okay here. And Joey's just brimming with confidence about this game tomorrow, Sal. But I want to start off by asking you this. It's been a theory of mine that the Seahawks go out of their way to play tight games because they take the ball out of Russell Wilson's hands as much as possible. Do you agree with that, that Seattle would actually be a better team if they didn't emphasize the run so much? And do you see perhaps Wilson maybe being a little more of a factor in their offensive game plan tomorrow?
You know, I don't, Pat. I think that the offensive game plan still revolves around running the football, notwithstanding the mistakes that they've made down near the goal line against San Francisco in the Super Bowl. If they just stuck with their core philosophy, they'd have two Super Bowl titles, and they probably would be sitting at home this weekend instead of traveling 3,000 miles to Philadelphia.
Right.
So when I looked back at the last game with Marshawn Lynch available to them, they've got Marshawn Lynch listed on the depth chart as the number one running back. I have the flip card here in front of me for tomorrow's game, and he is listed as the top running back on the roster. But to me, Travis Homer, the rookie out of the University of Miami, who's a tough sort of baby kind of Marshawn Lynch, he's a rookie. He had 10 carries for 62 yards, so that's averaging 6 yards a pop. I think that he is a real problem for this team tomorrow. I think Marshawn Lynch, Travis Homer, 1-2 punch, that's going to give the Eagles problems. I am not brimming with confidence about tomorrow's game. I think the Eagles have a legitimate shot to win the game, but of all the players in the NFL, there is Russell Wilson and Tom Brady are the two toughest outs at the quarterback position, and given where Brady is now in his career, I would put Russell Wilson as number one toughest out in the NFL.
Sal, we've been talking about it. We're going to kind of learn how tough Carson Wentz is as an out in a playoff scenario probably over the course of this year and the next couple of years here. What do you anticipate from him making his playoff debut?
Don't turn the ball over. That's the key, right, Joe? Carson Wentz is 0-3 versus the Seahawks. In those three losses, he's had 8 turnovers, 5 interceptions, 3 lost fumbles. In his career, when he doesn't turn the ball over, the Eagles are 18-3. To me, that's the key to the game. Period, paragraph, end of sentence. If Carson Wentz does not turn the ball over, the Eagles will have a great chance to win this game tomorrow.
That's simple. I mean, and Sal, the Eagles, one of the things I asked Joe earlier in the show, too, was that the way the Eagles have been hit by injuries, how significant, I mean, are they going to be able to win this game against a proven, tough, seasoned team with perhaps a banged up running back, banged up number one running back, and possibly not even have their number one receiver? I mean, at some point, does this magic have to run out that the Eagles have been playing on the last month?
I don't buy that, Pat. I don't think it's magic. I think that Doug Peterson and the coaching staff has done a great job of incorporating these players on the run, winning 4 games in a row and a division title. And they've done a good job of making sure that Carson Wentz is on the same page. They've totally transformed the football team from an offensive standpoint. They've gone up-tempo when they needed it, no huddle, sprinkling that in very liberally to the point where defenses are on their heels, can't substitute. That's 1. 2, the use of Boston Scott as sort of a mini Darren Sproles in the screen game, defined reads for Carson Wentz, allow him to get outside the pocket, move the launch point, something that we have preached on this show quite a bit this year, and it's happening. He's no longer a stationary target in the pocket. That means the interceptions have come down, the fumbles have come down for Carson Wentz. and he's playing freer and with more confidence. So I don't think there's any magic to this. I really don't. And I'm not trying to give you a propaganda point of view from the Eagles standpoint. I think that Peterson has done, in my view, one of the best coaching jobs of any Eagles coach in any year, including the year that he won the Super Bowl and he lost Carson Wentz on December 10th. This has been a remarkable transformation of a football team given the injuries they've had. So what's the key for this game, for this team tomorrow? One, I just mentioned it. Carson can't turn the ball over. They had 5 turnovers week 12 against Seattle and only lost 17-9. 5. Carson Wentz had 4 by himself. You eliminate 3 of them, they beat the Seahawks in week 12. They beat them because they only gave up 17 points. Since Jim Schwartz was hired by Peterson in 2016, the Eagles at home have given up 16 points a game. That's number one in the National Football League over that 4-year span. That number one. And I think they'll have enough defense. If they stop the run, they'll have enough defense. And if Carson Wentz doesn't turn the ball over, they'll win the game. Those are two big ifs, but those are the two bottom line things that have to happen in this game.
Well, two of the areas, Sal, in terms of minimizing the turnovers that have kind of been predictors. One, you see what Lane Johnson means to the offense and how effective Carson Wentz is when he's in the game and out of the game. And obviously we talk about Zach Ertz as being the security blanket. Both of those guys banged up. Still unclear if either or both would be able to go. What's your anticipation of what the Eagles offense looks like in the event that those guys cannot go?
Yeah, I mean, I think they've done a good job, again, of moving Carson around, moving the launch point so that they don't have to depend on Lane Johnson. I think they've done a good job of incorporating Dallas Goedert in the screen game, Boston Scott in the screen game, Greg Ward on the short and intermediate routes that have really worked. I think it's much more important that they have Miles Sanders tomorrow, at least as a contingency plan. And help the Boston Scott as an alternative and maybe a change of pace, then they have Lane Johnson and or Zach Ertz.
All right. All right, Sal, let's go. Let's look around the playoffs tomorrow away from Philadelphia. And Joey and I have been talking about this almost the whole show. Are we finally looking at perhaps the end of the Patriot run here? You know, even this weekend, let's just stick with this week because that's what the show is all about. You give Tennessee a puncher's chance to go in there tonight and win against a team that I was saying to Joe didn't expect to be playing tonight and as such might not be psychologically really excited about playing this game.
I think you put it right, Pat. I think puncher's chance is the way to put it. And that's about it. I think it's so tough to win in Foxborough in January. This is an inexperienced Tennessee team. They have really one shot to win the game, and that is give them a face mask full, a mouthful of Derrick Henry for 4 quarters. Stick to it. Whatever you do, don't let Ryan Tannehill lose the football game for you. Stay on schedule with your running back. Force them to tackle him for 4 quarters, and you got what you called correctly, a puncher's chance. I don't see it happening tonight. I think the Patriots move on tonight. I don't think it's over tonight. I don't.
All right.
And the other trend that we've been talking about is how strong Kirk Cousins is against teams that have 12 wins. You said it's 0-15 now, Pat, against...
0-15 against teams with 12 or more wins. I think that qualifies as a trend. I'm not sure.
Does that get snapped tomorrow against New Orleans on the road?
I have a lot of confidence that the Saints are going to win. I really do. And, you know, it's not only Drew Brees. Now you have to start looking at how well that defense is playing. Look at that guy, Demario Davis. That linebacker who was in Berea, Ohio, was on the Browns roster, was in Florham Park, New Jersey, was drafted by the Jets, was on a Jets roster. This guy now is the leading tackler on a team that was 13-3. You know, they have some really stud defensive players on a D-line, linebacker, corner, and safety position, all 4 levels of the defense. And the way Allen, their defensive coordinator, is coaching them and calling the defensive signals, they're going to be difficult. The Saints are going to be tough. The Eagles do not want to go down to New Orleans for another death march.
Yeah, we talked on this show numerous times, you and me, about it's the Jimmies and the Joes, and even though I've always said there's a psychological element in this too. Do you give the Saints any additional points for how 2 years ago they got shocked in that Stephon Diggs touchdown, and then last year how most people think they got robbed in that interference call? Yeah, is that additional points on the Saints' ledger going into this year?
Yeah, of course, Pat, for sure. You know, resentment is the rocket fuel of American success. That's a quote from Frank Sinatra.
There you go. That's a good one.
Yeah, I like that one. That's pretty good. Sal, in terms of the Eagles defensively, you talked about limiting the run game in particular, you know, them having enough. What have you seen from the Eagles defensively during this stretch of games that they've won four in a row that gives you the confidence they'll be able to do that against Seattle?
Malcolm Jenkins. Wow. Have you seen that Malcolm Jenkins has played every single defensive snap this season?
Yep.
965 defensive snaps. He's the only player in the NFL this year to start every defensive snap and go to the playoffs. The only one. That guy keeps it all together. I am just flabbergasted. He's an Iron Man. He's unbelievable. He's a total leader. He's kept it together with that revolving door of players in the secondary. I think he's the key, without a doubt. He's a tackling machine. And, tomorrow they're going to need him. They're going to need him big time. They're going to need everybody big time because you've got a gang tackle, and the guy who sets the tone is Malcolm Jenkins.
And Fletcher Cox, I mean, he made a big play last week to help win that game. But the fact is, he didn't make a single tackle. Now, is that because, like Aaron Donald, that teams are double-teaming him, and as such, it's really helping the rest of the defensive line? Or is this a guy who really needs to step up, too, and be heard from tomorrow?
I love when you do this. You set me up for a perfect, shameless promotion of the NFL matchup show. I want you to watch the show tomorrow because Greg Cosell, the founding father of the show, has a tremendous breakdown of Fletcher Cox sacking Russell Wilson, or setting up sacks of Russell Wilson. The Eagles sacked him a half dozen times in that game, and Fletcher Cox being double-teamed, or the lack of a double-team on Fletcher Cox, is what set up not one but two of those sacks. So watch it. Cox had a huge game, and Jim Schwartz did a great job scheming up pressure on Russell Wilson, which ain't easy to do, Pat. Ain't easy to do.
All right. We look forward to that very much. Watch the NFL matchup show, the longest running show on ESPN. So there you go. How about our top five now? We're going to save a few minutes for this. It's brought to you by our boy Pat McConaughey, Gleason's Bar in Levittown, PA, right up the street from Truman High. Pat recently took over Gleason's, and he's just rolled out his South Philly-style cheesecake. Stop on by Gleason's this weekend for their sliced, not chopped to death ribeye on a South Philly bake roll. Grab an ice cold beer from one of 10 taps. Watch the birds tomorrow on 6 brand new televisions. That's Gleason's Bar in Levittown, PA. All right, gentlemen. What I think maybe we'll do is a joint one here because we wouldn't have enough time. But what I wanted to do was come up with maybe the top five ways the game has changed in the last decade. All right?
Yes.
And I'm going to go first because somebody can at least set the table here, if I may be so bold. But just to say, like, my number one was the way replay and overall officiating have appeared to inhibit or deteriorate over the past decade. And replay, if anything, has, I think, made the game worse as from a viewing standpoint, because everything is so uncertain and no one seems to know, and it still takes forever. And then the officiating is clearly a qualitative problem that the league has not been able to solve in the last 10 years, and I think it's gotten under a much bigger microscope. Joey?
Nice of you to take two there of the ones that I would have gone with.
Okay.
Another one certainly has been the varying valuations of the running back position, where early on in 2010 was just about a low point for the value of the running back. It kind of has made a little bit of a resurgence now, but it's interesting to see that as offenses and defenses have changed, the role of the fullback and the running back and how those guys are valued in the league has also changed at a similar rate.
All right. Just to amplify that, Sal, in 2008, there were 16 1,000-yard rushers. In 2018, there were 9.
Pretty remarkable.
Yeah, that just goes to show you. All right, Sal, you want to throw one in here?
Yeah, well, I think, Pat, I like both of those. I think the two major changes that I would point to is, one, that teams are going for it on fourth down more than ever. And that's happened recently, and that's added an extra down to a lot of the thinking of both offensive and defensive coordinators. And I think it's made the game more exciting. And I think Doug Peterson's been at the forefront of that. The analytics show that to go for it on fourth down in most cases is a good idea. And coaches are starting to get on board with that, and I think it's made the game more exciting. Obviously, the biggest change has been, you know, the emphasis on player safety that has opened the game up. Made it more difficult to hit wide receivers downfield, which is a good thing. We want to make sure that the players are safe and make sure that, you know, star quarterbacks stay on the field. I know there's a lot of old school people out there that would like to go back to the troglodyte ways, but I think it's opened the game up. It's made the game safer. Concussions are down. Scoring is up. And as a result, more people are involved in the game. And I think that's important to grow the game down the road, too, for young people.
Yeah, I think they're excellent ones right there. And the last one I'll throw in with you two guys is the return of the RPO quarterback. It's funny how that comes and goes, but okay. I would say, and I would think that this one might be around a little bit more to stay.
Yes,
the quarterbacks.
Pat, that is a great one, Pat. We are playing option football right now in the NFL,
right.
Pat.
Right.
We're playing option football. Speed and deception. Where is the football? If you watch Deshaun Watson and Lamar Jackson, defensive players don't know where the ball is, and then it's too late because those guys are too fast and you can't catch up to them. Without a doubt, that's the one thing that's changed in the game recently that will catapult into the next decade. Option football, without a doubt. 100% agree. And options don't discriminate, by the way. If you've got options on offense, that's a bad thing for defensive coordinators and defensive players.
So interesting you guys bring that up, because the argument you always heard against the option in the NFL was, oh, defenses are always too fast. That logic never holds up. It's find faster offensive players.
Yeah. And the thing is, it dovetails with what Sal said, which was player safety. When you have this all-encompassing emphasis on player safety, then the quarterbacks are protected, quite frankly, even when they're running the ball.
Right.
And that really makes it even bigger in terms of going to a run pass option, because you know you're not as worried. John Harbaugh is not as worried that Lamar Jackson is going to get laid out.
Yeah, you know? The rule of unintended consequences is in effect here, and that's exactly right, Pat. The fact that it is now safe for quarterbacks to be out in the open has made it safe for option quarterbacks. And when you have dual-threat quarterbacks like that who can run and not be afraid of getting hit, get out of the way, baby.
Yeah. All right, Sal, I know you're going to be at the link tomorrow, and I think what I'm going to watch the game is all about is see if Carson doesn't turn it over. I think, Sal, that Carson is not going to have any jitters for his first game. I think he's on a nice run, and I think he's going to have a heck of a game tomorrow, and that leans more towards a Philadelphia victory. But I will look for the turnovers tomorrow and see who wins that game.
I don't think he has to have a heck of a game. I just think he has to take care of the football, just do what he's been doing. And that'll be enough.
All right. All right, Sal, we appreciate it. We got a couple more weeks to go here, so we look forward to talking to you next week in the divisional round, which is really probably the best weekend of the year in turn, because the big boys show up.
All right. You guys have a great one. Enjoy a wild card weekend. I'll see you.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.